The countdown is on for the 2026 Men's World Cup of Soccer, or football if you prefer. In 1 year, Toronto and Vancouver will each host a handful of matches. The rest of the tournament will be played in the United States and Mexico. And while there's lots to be excited about when it comes to playing host, there are also a lot of questions around FIFA's expectations. A newly revealed contract between FIFA and the City of Vancouver featuring items like controlled area and host city beautification has some residents confused, even concerned. Here's how some Vancouverites are feeling ahead of the tournament.
Welcome to FIFA. They bully the cities into getting things the way they want it, and I just think we shouldn't be doing business with people like that.
I'm pretty excited about Vancouver hosting FIFA. Having like a burst of tourism is good for the city. I was a kid when the Olympics were here, but I just think that people will go through. It's all temporary for like a fun event, so I think I'll definitely tune in. I'll try to get tickets.
Personally, I don't think it's an awesome idea. It's going to raise a lot of the prices. It's going to make everything a little ridiculous, and all they're going to do is like try to hide all of the bad things that are going on instead of fixing them. So instead of helping the homeless, they're going to give them bus tickets like they did for the Olympics. Although I'm sure it's going to bring lots of tourism and lots of money, and all the rich people are going to be very happy, but all the normal people are only going to suffer from this. So I think it's ludicrous, really.
Clearly, a range of opinions on this. Meg Holden is a professor of urban studies at Simon Fraser University. She studies the impact these types of events have on cities. Meg, good morning.
Good morning, Catherine.
The host city contract between FIFA and Vancouver was just made public 3 years after a local journalist, Bob Mackin, filed a Freedom of Information request. It's a 98-page document. It outlines some of the requirements FIFA has for Vancouver and BC placed as host city and host stadium. In those 98 pages, what stands out to you the most?
2 kilometers. 2 kilometers. As a Vancouverite, that means the controlled area could be 2 kilometers radius from BC Place and 100 meters around the fan zone at Hastings Park. And 2 kilometers, if you imagine the geography of downtown Vancouver, takes us into the West End on the west side. It encompasses Chinatown, most of the downtown east side. It goes all the way to Granville Island. Are we talking about Olympic Village as well? It's a huge radius where 120,000 people or more live.
And what does it mean when we talk about a controlled area?
Well, I guess the most important paragraph to look at then in the document to think about what that means is the part that, in spite of Bob Mackin's efforts in court, the city and FIFA would not release, but we were able to sort of compare it with Seattle's contract, and we can tell that it means traffic restrictions and extreme traffic restrictions, which could really impede the ability of people to move throughout that entire area.
Beyond the traffic restrictions, what do we think it means for the people who live in that area, the businesses that operate in that area?
Yeah, again, it's just a series of breadcrumbs, right? And we've seen City of Vancouver making moves to increase the ease of setting up businesses in vacant spaces and parts of the downtown. So waiving business licenses requirements, but FIFA is going to require certain merchandise to be sold, certain merchandise not to be sold. And so we can imagine a really drastic change in the look and the kinds of businesses that are up and running throughout that controlled area.
What would you say then to folks who might say, okay, traffic headaches are unfortunate, but they are part of holding big events. Some of these restrictions are just kind of the price of playing poker for when you host something big.
Sure. Yeah, sure. And I think that's reasonable. And in Vancouver, you know, we had the experience in the lifetime of some of us, at least, of hosting the Winter Olympics. It was lots of fun. It was definitely a break from our regular life to be out in the streets with lots of people from around the world. But we're talking about a potentially sustained impact on our ability to move freely. We're talking about probably not being able to use SkyTrain, not being able to use businesses in the way that we would expect to. And that's, you know, that's home for 120,000 Vancouverites as well. And then if you think at the different, from an equity perspective, right, like look at the people who are living in single room occupancy hotel spaces and even small, very small rental apartments and condos, because housing is so expensive. That housing only works if you can get out into what we consider the living room of the city during the day. And if there are extreme measures imposed on people's ability to be outside in that controlled area, especially if you can't afford the tickets or the businesses, then that's putting some real risks on public health.
Yeah, what is it? I wonder if you could be a bit more pointed about that. What are you worried about for some of these folks who live in the downtown east side, for instance?
You know, I'm worried about extreme heat, which could happen. We're talking about mid-June to mid-July. It can be very hot. And if you imagine you're living in a 250 square feet without any good ventilation, air quality inside can be terrible. Air quality outside could be terrible if we have a bad forest fire season. What are the plans to make life tolerable for people? And I'm thinking, Catherine, too, about the only real move that the city's made with respect to the community, you know, like trying to give back. Not just in like the sort of the very indirect way of increasing tourism, which doesn't necessarily or directly benefit residents. I'm talking about the initial move of the city to try and put the training grounds in a very beloved community park in South Vancouver, a poor neighborhood. And they were just going to take that park away for 2 years so that it could be commandeered for training when a perfectly good training facility exists in UBC. So there's a concern that the city is really not seeing this as an opportunity to bring the community in, but an opportunity to shut the community out in order to invite particular kinds of visitors to the expectations of FIFA.
There's also a reference in the contract to beautification requirements. Why does that have some folks' hackles up?
Yeah, well, because Vancouver's downtown is a living room, and it's a living room for a wide cross-section of the socioeconomic spectrum. And there are very different ideas about what it takes to make those spaces livable if you're living on a very low income or no income at all, compared to if you're living on the kind of income that, you know, turns you into a global jet setter and tourist. And so if we're going to impose some particular FIFA-based aesthetic, what does that mean for the kind of urban design and tolerance and inclusion principles that we've put so much, you know, decades of work into managing and establishing within the Vancouver downtown core.
So what do you think is the best path forward then, Meg? I mean, we have a better sense of this contract now. This event is happening. What would you like to see the city do?
Well, do you remember back before Vancouver hosted the Winter Olympics in 2010, the city actually held a plebiscite, and it was entirely symbolic, but symbols matter. And it was a plebiscite about whether Vancouver residents wanted to host the Olympic Games. It was a bit of a gamble, but it set in motion a series of events where groups of citizens and groups of residents got together in order to say, okay, well, this is what we would like to argue for in order to make sure that we're benefiting from this global event for the time that it's here, but for the years after. You know, what is going to be the legacy of this hosting event? And it could be good, right? I mean, soccer is a great cultural melting pot, but are we actually going to see those kinds of benefits in Vancouver next year and then for the coming years?
Okay. Thank you for your perspective on this, Meg. Appreciate it.
Great. Thanks very much.
Meg Holden is a professor of urban studies at Simon Fraser University. She is in Vancouver. Jules Boykoff is a professor of politics and government at Pacific University in Oregon. He's one of the world's leading experts on mega sporting events and has written 6 books about the Olympics and how these events shape the cities who host them. He's also a former U23 U.S. national soccer player. Jules, good morning.
Good morning.
Those restrictions we just heard about, how concerned do you think folks in Vancouver should be?
People in Vancouver should definitely be concerned about restrictions placed on their mobility. People in Vancouver should definitely be concerned about the costs that the event of hosting the FIFA World Cup next summer are going to be. People in Vancouver should be concerned about their neighbors who aren't rich, like we were just hearing from Professor Holden. These sporting events like the FIFA World Cup of Soccer or the Olympic Games tend to benefit the upper echelons of economic society at the expense, oftentimes, of working class people in the host city.
And what tends to happen to those people? Are we talking about simply inconvenience, more difficulty getting around? Or Professor Holden was talking about the possibility of, you know, public health issues that are more profound than that, I think.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of possibilities, and a lot of them are very much not pretty. One of them is that poor folks in the area, and we're talking unhoused folks, tend to be rounded up by the police and moved out of the area. We've seen this in Olympics after Olympics, World Cup after World Cup, after all the global media descends on the host city. And the host city wants to put its best foot forward for all the reasons around tourism and economic development that we've been talking about. And they don't want unhoused people there gumming things up. And so what we're seeing is FIFA is expecting that numerous NGOs in various cities that are hosting the event are going to step up and do this. The only thing is FIFA is not asking or giving money to these organizations to help them find new places for unhoused people to be. So for their own safety and also to make the event pull off. So I would say that unhoused people are especially vulnerable here, but it's not just them. It's everyday people, because when you look at those rosy forecasts that were made in the bid process for the FIFA World Cup, they've really wilted under the heat of reality. I mean, costs are increasing in city after city, and these cities are facing real fiscal pressure. People were told they were going to have an opportunity to make money off the World Cup or the Olympics, for example, but oftentimes they're fenced out, literally outside of the fence, and they don't have the money-making opportunities. And in fact, it's those corporate sponsors that pay millions upon millions of dollars to be associated with these big mega events that actually accrue the benefits.
There are a few things I want to dig into there. First, you talk about cost overruns. We should let folks know that the original cost of this, released by the provincial government at the end of January 2023, pegged the bill at $230 million. The latest update, which came forward towards the end of June, says the cost could go up to $624 million. So your point about cost overruns, we're seeing some of that play out. When it comes to the restrictive nature of these contracts, how much flexibility do cities have to negotiate that with FIFA? Like, we don't know what happened behind closed doors, but should we imagine that cities could do more to perhaps put more of the onus on FIFA or just demand less of the residents? Or is this just what has to happen if a city wants to host the World Cup?
The economic relationship between FIFA and these various cities is essentially etch-a-sketch economics. I mean, during the bid phase, they're told that it's going to cost this much to host a few matches for the FIFA World Cup. But then that etch-a-sketch gets shaken up and a new number magically appears. We're seeing it, like you said, in Vancouver, Toronto. You have to give credit to people like Chicago and Minneapolis, who saw the writing on the wall. And they said, you know, we don't actually want to have anything to do with this. We can see that we're already facing real fiscal pressure, and we are afraid that, you know, the game could change over time. So once the contracts are signed, I mean, the wiggle room is often quite minimal. If you look at the contract that came out through the excellent work of independent journalist Bob Mackin there in Vancouver, you can see that there's very little wiggle room at this stage for cities to make deals with FIFA. FIFA's holding the cards at this point. And I should say FIFA is slated to make more than $10 billion in revenue from the 2026 World Cup. This is double the revenues from the Russia Men's World Cup in 2018. 75% more than the $7.5 billion that FIFA brought in for the Qatar 2022 Men's World Cup cycle. So they have money and they could spread it around, but they tend to be quite miserly with it and look out for their own interests, not the city in which they're visiting.
This is an interesting World Cup because it's hosted across three separate countries. And I know you have been covering the potential impact that this could have on undocumented immigrants in the United States. Can you talk to us a bit about your concerns about what this means for people in U.S. host cities who are undocumented?
Absolutely. The World Cup structures permission for the federal government to be even more brutal in its crackdown on immigration. The current U.S. administration's abusive immigration policies, which include basically abductions by masked members of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, using the flimsy logic of the Alien Enemies Act, really has ramped up pressure on immigrant communities here in the United States. And there's real concerns, and I share them, that visitors from the United to the United States for the World Cup could get snapped up by ICE. I mean, ICE is running wild. They look like they just came from robbing a liquor store, and they're just snatching people off the streets and telling them they don't have rights. They're snatching U.S. citizens off the streets. They're snatching Native people off the streets, the first people. If they're snatching the first peoples off the streets here in the United States, you can bet that they're willing to snatch the most recent people who are just visiting for a soccer tournament. So I'm very concerned that this could have major ramifications for immigrant communities and just fans who want to come cheer on their team here in the United States.
What do we know about how FIFA is responding to those concerns?
Well, one might think, given the fact that FIFA talks a big game about human rights, that they'd be jumping up and down and forcing President Donald Trump to make some changes and some promises. But instead, the president of FIFA, his name is Gianni Infantino, he's Trump sycophant number one. I mean, he has been so hyper-focused on kissing the feet of authoritarians that he's barely apparently paid any attention to what's going on with ICE in the United States. So it was an ominous sign when during the World Cup, the Club World Cup of soccer, which happened here in the United States over the summer, it was an ominous sign when FIFA just magically dropped its customary anti-racism, anti-discrimination messages. I mean, these are just basic things like don't be racist, don't discriminate against other people, and that usually flash in the stadiums where the games are. Gianni Infantino's FIFA took them down. He didn't want to offend President Trump, whose many of his policies are very much discriminatory and problematic from a perspective of FIFA's statutes. One last point. I mean, this isn't just a problem with Gianni Infantino here in the United States, although he bears huge responsibility for it. But at the 2022 Men's World Cup in Qatar, fans from Iran were putting up banners and signs saying women, life, freedom. They were removed from stadiums. Even rainbow flags were confiscated at a number of matches. So FIFA's got a pretty ugly track record when it comes to standing up for the principles that it supposedly abides by because they're nestled in the statutes that govern its operations.
Given the very serious concerns you've raised, it is perhaps strange to ask about the other side of the coin, but there are certainly people who are very much in favor of these events, who say, you know, it's a chance for more visibility. This is in some ways a big global party. You know, it's a hopeful event for people who watch the matches on TV or might get the opportunity to attend one in person and wouldn't otherwise. Is there an upside for cities, in your view, for hosting these events?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Catherine, because in your intro for me, you mentioned that I do have a history in soccer. It was a huge part of my life, and I love the sport. I still follow. I cheer for the Portland Timbers and Portland Thorns here in Portland, Oregon, where I live. And so I'm not some grumpy academic who just hates sports and wants to tear them down. I actually think that events like the World Cup or the Olympics are hugely important for athletes to get visibility. They can be a lot of fun for people to attend. I mean, they'll remember these things for the rest of their lives. But these organizations that govern these events, like the World Cup and the Olympics, they tend to look out for themselves and themselves first. And like I've been saying, they have billions of dollars swirling into their coffers. They could do a lot better when it comes to spreading the money to local communities, making these events more affordable for those who don't have a lot of money, and leaving a positive legacy legacy and not debt displacement and militarization in their wake. So, you know, I'm entirely in favor of the athletes that are going to be coming to the United States to play in this World Cup. I just hope that they're safe, that their families are safe, if they're even allowed in the country, and that fans who might like to attend the games aren't snatched up by ICE or Customs and Border Protection just as they go to watch a soccer match.
Okay. Thank you very much for this conversation.
Thank you.
Jules Boykoff is a professor of politics and government at Pacific University in Oregon. He's one of the world's leading experts on mega sporting events and has written 6 books about the Olympics. He was in Oregon.